This is KLLG LP 97.9 FM Willits, California. I'm Greg Schindel, train singer, now boarding the Bipolar Express. Chugga, 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 chugga up the hill. Puffin' and a chuggin', you know that engine will reach the summit and go down the other side. Whoopee! What a ride! Clickety-clackety, clickety-clackety.
Whoop, whoop, whoopee! What a ride indeed. We are closing in on Halloween once again and all that spooky stuff. And we will be entering the season of Samhain. Yes, Samhain. On November the 1st. And that's from the Wheel of the Year. Now, Samhain is another yearly opportunity for modern pagans to celebrate semi-festivals. Well, I'm going to the semi-festival tonight. Hey, a party on, whoopee! You know, by the way, the world is still spinning and revolving and zipping at the speed of light as our solar system is carried by the Milky Way to God knows where. Well, anyway, so party on, spook on, and keep tuned to KLLG LP 97.9 FM. Woo woo, Willits. Yeah. Hey, Before we get carried away on the BPE today, here are a few upcoming events worth noting on your calendar. For example, Halloween, 9 p.m., North Spur Brewery opens with, yes, it's true, the Dirt Floor Band. Oh, God, keep on, Grandpa. Hey, these guys, they make you dance. It's a pound, foot, fly dance and stuff from the Dirt Floor. I will be there. That is after singing and playing at the Waldorf School's Magical Pumpkin Path celebration. That starts at 5 p.m. till 8 o'clock, and that's at the Waldorf School in Calpella. And that will be me, train singer, not you, Greg. I know, but I'll be at the brewery. So will I. Okay. And on November 1st, hey, Shakespeare, the 12th night, opens at the WCT. Shakespeare, that's right, those artless bass court Apple Johns, those reeky onion eyes, lewdsters. Oh, my goodness, you don't want to get carried away with that one again, Gregory, do you? No, but now this is going to run for 2 weeks, Friday, Saturday, and Sundays at the Willits Community Theater. This is Shakespeare in Willits. You don't want to miss the 12th night. So, for the next 2 weeks. Now, let me see. Oh, and don't forget, Sunday, November the 3rd is the beginning of daylight saving. So, if you want to start saving something, you don't have to worry about it. Our little clocks will save it for you. Boo! Dark at 5. Light at 6. So,
Fall behind.
That's right. Fall behind, spring ahead. We're going back now. See, this would actually be, I'm not going to say the time because someone might be listening and they won't think, anyway. Hey, and then again, what was it? On November the 4th, it's twining time at the Brick House. Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twining time. That's a read. They return to the Brick House, 12:30 to 3. Hey, their music goes really well with a bagel, lox, and cream cheese, and capers, and, you know, a latte on the side. Twining Time, Brick House, November the 4th, 12:30 to 3. Once again, also Sunday, November 10th, Local Lights continues. It's open stage opportunity for local musicians to do their thing on a really cool stage in a very cool environment. And that's at the Willett Center for the Arts. And that begins at 5 o'clock. And by the way, it'll probably be dark by then. No, no. Yes, it'll be dark, right? Come on down in the night. Open mic, you know, it starts at 5. And we have features. The featured performers begin at 6. This month, the Back Porch Project will be on hand to bring you some of that good time music you want to hear. I want to hear it too. Maybe I'll be there. Also, if anyone out there has a CD or a poem or something you'd like to share, call me 459-3739 to set a date here on the Bipolar Express. This is your hometown radio. Come on, come on, everybody. There's wonderful energy for you here. Be part of it. It's really fun. I'm doing it for the fun of it, and so is Mike. Yes, Mike. Wake up, Mike. Oh, that's all right. He's writing down. No, I don't. Hey, last week, we heard the Monster Mash and some other Halloween-appropriate stuff. So I thought I'd continue a bit with that theme with a couple of short stories here. Yes, I'm going to read, so if you're driving in your car, turn it off because you're boring, you know. I might freak you out. That is cool because they're kind of creepy, like me this time of year. Great, great. Get a hold of yourself. I will train. I will. I will. Thank you. Okay. Now, various stages of insanity, by the way, can produce delusions and fantasies and hallucinations that seem real to the madman. And surely this is such the case in our Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart. It's true, yes. I have been ill, very ill. But why do you say that? I've lost control of my mind. Why do you say that I am mad? Why, can you not see that I have full control of my mind? Is it not clear that I'm not mad? Well, indeed, the illness only made my mind, my feelings, my senses stronger, more powerful. My sense of hearing especially became more powerful. I could hear sounds I had never heard before. I heard sounds from heaven. Oh, I heard sounds from hell. Listen, and I will tell you how it happened. You'll see. You will hear how healthy my mind is. It is impossible to say how the idea first entered my head. There was no reason for what I did. I did not hate the old man. I even loved him. He had never hurt me. I did not want his money. I think it was his eye. His eye was like the eye of a vulture. The eye of one of those terrible birds that watch and wait while an animal dies and then fall upon the dead body and pull it to pieces to eat it. Huh. Well, when the old man looked at me with his vulture's eye, a cold feeling went up and down back. Even my blood became cold. And so I finally decided I had to kill the old man and close that eye forever. So, you think that I'm mad? You know, a madman cannot plan. But you should have seen me. Oh, during all that week, I was as friendly to the old man as I could be, and warm and loving. Every night about 12 o'clock, I slowly opened his door, and when the door was open wide enough, I put my hand in, and then my head. And in my hand, I held a light covered over with a cloth so that no light showed, and I stood there quietly. Then carefully, I lifted the cloth just a little so that a single, thin, small light fell across that eye. For 7 nights I did this. 7 long nights. Every night at midnight. Always, the eye was closed. So it was impossible for me to do the work. For it was not the old man I felt I had to kill. It was the eye, his evil eye. And every morning, I went to his room and the warm, friendly voice. I asked him how he'd slept. He could not guess that every night, just at 12, I looked in at him as he slept. The 8th night, I was more than usually careful as I opened the door. The hands of the clock move more quickly than did my hand. Never before had I felt so strongly my own power. I was now sure of success. The old man was lying there, not dreaming that I was at his door. Suddenly, he moved in his bed. You may think I became afraid, but no. The darkness in his room was thick and black. I knew he could not see the opening of the door. I continued to push the door, slowly, softly. I put in my hand with the covered light. Suddenly, the old man sat straight up in bed and cried, "Who's there? Who's there?" I stood quite still. For a whole hour, I did not move. Nor did I hear him again lie down in his bed. He just sat there, listening. Then I heard a sound, a low cry of fear, which escaped from the old man. Now I knew that he was sitting up in his bed, filled with fear. I knew that he knew I was there. He did not see me there. He could not hear me there. He felt me there. Now he knew that death was standing there. Slowly, little by little, I lifted the cloth until a small, small light escaped from under it to fall upon that vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open, and my anger increased as it looked straight at me. I could not see the old man's face, only that eye. That hard blue eye, and the blood in my body became like ice. Have I not told you that my hearing had become unusually strong? Now I could hear a quick, low, soft sound, like the sound of a clock heard through a wall. It was the beating of the old man's heart. I tried to stand quietly, but the sound grew louder. The old man's fear must have been great indeed. And as the sound grew louder, my anger became greater and more painful. But it was more than anger. In the quiet night, in the dark silence, the bedroom, my anger became fear, for the heart was beating so loudly that I was sure someone must hear. The time had come. I rushed into the room crying, "Die! Die!" The old man gave a loud cry for fear, and I fell on him. I held the bed covers tightly over his head. But still, his heart was beating. I smiled, and I felt success was near. For many minutes, that heart continued to beat. But at last, the beating stopped. The old man was dead. I took away the bed covers and I held my ear over his heart. There was no sound. Yes, he was dead. Dead as a stone. His eye would trouble me no more. So, I'm mad, you say? Why, you should have seen how careful I was to put the body where no one could find it. First, I cut off the head. Then the arms and the legs. Oh, God. I was careful not to let a single drop of blood fall on the floor. I pulled up three of the boards that formed the floor and put the pieces of the body there. Then I put the boards down again, carefully, so carefully that no human eye could see that they had been moved. And as I finished this work, I heard that someone was at the door. Well, it was now 4 o'clock in the morning, but still dark. I had no fear. However, as I went down to open the door, three men at the door. Three officers of the police. Well, one of the neighbors had heard the old man's cry and, well, had called the police. And these three had come to ask questions and to search the house. Well, I asked the policeman to come in. The cry, I said, was my own. It was a dream. The old man, I said, was away. He'd gone to visit a friend in the country. I took them through the whole house, telling them to search it all, to search well. I led them finally into the old man's bedroom, as if playing a game with them. I asked them to sit down and talk for a while. My easy, quiet manner made the policemen believe my story. So they sat talking with me in a friendly way. But although I answered them in the same way, I soon wished that they would go. My head hurt, and there was a strange sound in my ears. I talked more and faster. The sound became clearer, and still they sat and talked. Suddenly, I knew. That sound was not in my ears. It was not just inside my head. At that moment, I must have become quite white. I talked still faster and louder. The sound, too, became louder. It was quick. It was a quick, low, soft sound, like the sound of a clock heard through a wall. A sound I knew well. Louder it became, and louder. Why did the men not go? Louder, louder. I stood up, and I walked quickly around the room. I pushed my chair across the floor to make more noise, to cover that terrible sound. I talked even louder. And still the men sat and talked and smiled. Was it possible that they could not hear? No. Oh, no. They hear. I was certain of it. They knew. Now, it was they who were playing a game with me. I was suffering more than I could beat. I couldn't bear it. From their smiles and from that sound. Louder, louder, louder. Suddenly, I could bear it no longer. I pointed at the boards and cried, "Yes, yes, I killed him. Pull up the boards. You shall see. I killed him. Why does this heart not stop beating? Why does it not stop?" Oh. Well, there you have it, folks. A little bit of Edgar Allan Poe on the Bipolar Express on You Bet, KLLGLP 97.9. So I'd like to say, I'm going to move right along here and do this. This story is a little longer, and it's in a language that is quite, I want to say archaic, but not quite. If you were studied English in college or even paid attention in high school, it might be of interest to you. But this man was born in 1873. What was his name? Oh, well, anyway, Washington Irving. Does it ring a bell? Legend of Sleepy Hollow? Anyway, this is a story from Rod Serling's Devils and Demons. It's collected these stories from the past. And this is Washington Irving, American short story writer, essayist, biographer, historian, and diplomat of the early 19th century. As I mentioned, his best-known Wilt Van Winkle in The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. But this is a little bit different. And my question to you out there and to the narrator, is the narrator in his right mind? Are you, Greg? Oh, come on, train. You know I'm not.
They're both okay.
Yeah, but Mike says we're okay. All right, folks, again, this is KLLGLP 97.9 FM. Get ready to hear the adventure of the German student by Washington Irving. On a stormy night in the tempestuous times of the French Revolution, a young German was returning to his lodgings at a late hour across the old part of Paris. The lightning gleamed, and the loud claps of thunder rattled through the lofty, narrow streets. But I should first tell you something about this young German. Excuse me. Gottfried Wolfgang was a young man of a good family. He had studied for some time at Göttingen, but being of a visionary and enthusiastic character, he had wandered into those wild and speculative doctrines which have so often bewildered German students. His secluded life, his intense application, and the singular nature of his studies had an effect on both mind and body. His health was impaired, his imagination diseased. He had been indulging in fanciful speculation and spiritual essences until, like Swedenborg, he had an ideal world of his own all around him.
You can relate to that.
He took up an evil influence. He took up an evil notion. I do not know from what cause that there was an evil influence hanging over him, an evil genius or spirit seeking to ensnare him and ensure his perdition. Oof. Such an idea working on his melancholy temperament produced the most gloomy effects. He became haggard and desponding. His friends discovered the mental malady preying upon him and determined that the best cure was a change of scene. He was sent, therefore, to finish his studies amidst the splendors and gaieties of Paris. Wolfgang arrived at Paris at the breaking out of the revolution. The popular delirium at first caught his enthusiastic mind, and he was captivated by the political and philosophical theories of the day. But the scenes of blood which followed shocked his sensitive nature, disgusted him with society and the world, and made him more than ever a recluse. He shut himself up in a solitary apartment in the Pays Latin from the monastic walls of the Sorbonne. There was a gloomy street not far from there. He pursued his favorite speculations Sometimes he spent hours together in the great libraries of Paris, those catacombs of departed authors, rummaging among their hordes of dusty and obsolete works in quest of food for his unhealthy appetite. He was, in a manner, a literary ghoul, feeding in the charnel house of decayed literature. Ooh, that's spooky, isn't it, Mike? Mm-hmm. Jeez, that poor guy.
Decaying literature.
Whoa. Wolfgang, though solitary and recluse, was of an ardent temperament, but for a time it operated merely upon his imagination. He was too shy and ignorant of the world to make any advances to the fair. But he was a passionate admirer of female beauty, and in his lonely chamber would often lose himself in reveries on forms and faces which he had seen, and his fancy would deck out images of loveliness far surpassing the reality. While his mind was in this excited and sublimated state, a dream produced an extraordinary effect upon him. It was of a female face of transcendent beauty. So strong was the impression made that he dreamt of it again and again. It haunted his thoughts by day, his slumbers by night. In fine, he became passionately enamored of this shadow of a dream. This lasted so long that it became one of those fixed ideas which haunt the minds of melancholy men and are at times mistaken for madness. Well, such was Gottfried Wolfgang, and such his situation at the time I mentioned. He was returning home late one stormy night through some of the old and gloomy streets of the Marais, the ancient part of Paris. The loud claps of thunder rattled among the high houses of the narrow streets. He came to the Place de Grève, the square where public executions are performed. The lightning quivered about the pinnacles of the ancient Hôtel de Ville and shed flickering gleams over the open space in front. As Wolfgang was crossing the square, he shrank back in horror at finding himself close by the guillotine. Oh, God. It was the height of the reign of terror when this dreadful instrument of death stood ever ready with its scaffold, and its scaffold was continually running with the blood of the virtuous and the brave. It had that very day been actively employed in the work of carnage, and there it stood in grim array amidst a silent and sleeping city waiting for fresh victims. Wolfgang's heart sickened within him. And he was turning, shuddering from the horrible engine, when he beheld a shadowy form, cowering, as it were, at the foot of the steps which led up to the scaffold. A succession of vivid flashes of lightning revealed it more distinctly. It was a female figure dressed in black. She was seated on one of the lower steps of the scaffold, leaning forward, her face hid in her lap, and her long, disheveled tresses hanging to the ground, streaming with the rain which fell in torrents. Wolfgang paused. There was something awful in this solitary moment of woe. The female had the appearance of being above the common order. He knew the times to be full of vicissitude, and that many a fair head which had once been pillowed on down now wandered homeless, houseless. Perhaps this was some poor mourner whom the dreadful axe had rendered desolate, and who sat there heartbroken on the strand of existence from which all that was dear to her had been launched into eternity. Oh, gosh. He approached and addressed her in the accent of sympathy. Oh, she raised her head and gazed wildly at him. What was his astonishment at beholding, by the light, bright glare of the lightning, it was the very face which had haunted him in his dreams. It was pale and disconsolate, but ravishingly beautiful. Oh, trembling with violent and conflicting emotions, Wolfgang again accosted her. He spoke something of her being exposed at such an hour of the night and to the fury of such a storm, and offered to conduct her to her friends. She pointed to the guillotine with a gesture of dreadful significance.
"I have no friend on earth," she said.
"But you have a home," said Wolfgang.
"Yes, in the grave."
Well, the heart of the student melted at the words. "If a stranger dare make an offer," said he, "without danger of being misunderstood, I would offer my humble dwelling as a shelter, myself as a devoted friend. I'm friendless, and myself in Paris, and a stranger in the land. But if my life could be of service, it is at your disposal, and should be sacrificed before harm or indignity should come to you." There was an honest earnestness in the young man's manner, and that had its effect, and his foreign accent, too, was in his favor. It showed him not to be a hackneyed inhabitant of Paris. Indeed, there's an eloquence in true enthusiasm that is not to be doubted. The homeless stranger confided herself implicitly to the protection of the student. He supported her faltering steps across Pont Neuf, and by the place where the statue of Henry IV had been overthrown by the populace. The storm had abated, and the thunder rumbled in the distance. All Paris was quiet. That great volcano of human passion slumbered for a while to gather fresh strength for the next day's eruption. The student conducted his charge through the ancient streets of the Pays Latin and by the dusky walls of the Sorbonne to the great dingy hotel which he inhabited. The old portress who admitted them stared with surprise at the unusual sight of the melancholy Wolfgang with a female companion. On entering his apartment, the student for the first time blushed at the scantiness and indifference of his dwelling. He had but one chamber, an old-fashioned saloon, heavily carved and fantastically furnished with the remains of former magnificence, for it was once one of those hotels in which the quarter of Luxembourg Palace, which had once belonged to nobility. It was lumbered with books and papers and all the usual apparatus of a student, and his bed stood in a recess at one end. When lights were brought, and Wolfgang had a better opportunity of contemplating the stranger, he was more than ever intoxicated by her beauty. Her face was pale, but of a dazzling fairiness. It set off by a profusion of raven hair that hung in clusters about it. Her eyes were large and brilliant, with a singular expression approaching almost to wildness. As far as her black dress permitted her shape to be seen, it was of perfect symmetry. Her whole appearance was highly striking, though she was dressed in the simplest style. The only thing approaching to an ornament which she wore was a broad black band around her neck, clasped by diamonds.
Oh, I heard her come in. There she is. She came into the room. The perplexity now commenced with the student. How to dispose of the helpless being thus thrown upon his protection? His thought of abandoning his chamber to her and seeking shelter for himself elsewhere. Well, but still, he was so fascinated by her charms. There seemed to be such a spell upon his thoughts and senses that he could not tear himself from her presence. Oh, her manner, too, was singular, unaccountable. Well, she spoke no more of this guillotine. Her grief had abated. The attentions of the student had first won her confidence, and then, apparently, her heart. She was evidently an enthusiast like himself, and enthusiasts soon understand each other. In that infatuation of the moment, Wolfgang avowed his passion for her. He told her the story of his mysterious dream, and how she had possessed his heart before he'd even seen her. Well, she was strangely affected by his recital and acknowledged to have felt an impulse toward him equally unaccountable. It was the time for wild theory and wild actions. Old prejudices and superstitions were done away. Everything was under the sway of the, quote, goddess of reason. Among other rubbish of the old times, the forms and ceremonies of marriage began to be considered superfluous bonds for honorable minds. Social compacts were the vogue. Wolfgang was too much of a theorist not to be tainted by the liberal doctrines of the day. "Why should we separate?" said he. "Our hearts are united. In the eye of reason and honor, we are as one. What need is there of sordid forms to bind high souls together?" Ah, the stranger listened with emotion. She had evidently received illumination at the same school. "You have no home, nor family," continued he. "Let me be everything to you, or rather, let us be everything to one another. If form is necessary, form shall be observed. There is my hand. I pledge myself to you forever, ever."
"Forever?" said the stranger solemnly.
"Forever, forever," repeated Wolfgang.
The stranger clasped the hand extended to her.
"Then I am yours," murmured she, and sank upon his bosom.
The stranger clasped his hand extended to her.
"Then I am yours," she said again. The next morning, the student left his bride sleeping and sallied forth at an early hour to seek more spacious apartments suitable to the change in his situation. When he returned, he found the stranger lying with her head hanging over the bed and one arm thrown over it. He spoke to her, but received no reply. He advanced to awaken her from her uneasy posture, and on taking her hand, it was cold. There was no pulsation. Her face was pallid and ghastly. In a word, she was a corpse. Horrified and frantic, he alarmed the house. A sense of confusion ensued. The police were summoned. And as the officer of police entered the room, he started back on beholding the corpse.
"Great heaven," cried he. "How did this woman come to be here?"
"Well, do you know anything about her?" said Wolfgang eagerly.
"Do I?" exclaimed the officer.
"She was guillotined yesterday." He stepped forward, undid the black collar round the neck of the corpse, and the head rolled onto the floor. The student burst into a frenzy. Oh, the fiend! The fiend! The fiend has gained possession of me! I am lost forever! Oh, God! They tried to soothe him, but in vain! Oh, no! He was possessed with a frightful belief that an evil eye, an evil spirit, had reanimated the body to ensnare him. He went distracted and died in a madhouse. Now here, the old gentleman telling the story, the man with the haunted head, finished his narrative. And is this really a fact? Said the inquisitive gentleman. A fact not to be doubted, replied the other. I had it from the best authority. The student told it to me himself. I saw him in a madhouse in Paris. This is KLLG LP 97.9 FM in Willits, California, and you have been riding on the Bipolar Express. By the way, have you seen the ghost of John? Long white bones and the flesh all gone. Ooh. Wouldn't it be chilly with no skin on? Yes, okay, I know it. I'm just trying to be scary out here. I hope you've enjoyed this little segment on the BB Express. Okay, now with a complete change of God knows what. How can you do this to me? I'm going to pick up my auto harp. And this is something I have to tell you, I used to have to bring in two auto harps, as you recall, Mike, because of the bars were some of my songs, they didn't have what I needed, so. But what I did was I got the auto harp that I play on the train. You notice I put a guard on it, too. I'm ripping it apart. I have bad habits when I play wooden instruments. I tear them up. I'm going over here. I'm still here. Are you here, train?
Yeah, I'm here, Greg. God.
Okay. Are you out there? Are you way out there, BPE Express fans? How much time do we have here right now?
20 minutes.
20 minutes? Oh, well, I'm going to have to cut some of this short, but that's okay. That's not the first time I've done that. All right, so here we go. I'm going to do... Oh, what am I talking about? Oh, yes, I need to turn the page in my life. Oh, hey, I know, geez, oof, like that book I was reading you a little earlier. I had to clean the dust off it. Well, let me give you, for those folks who haven't heard my auto harp thing, I'll give you just a brief history, a brief one. You know, debate exists over the origin of the auto harp. A German immigrant in Philadelphia, Charles F. Zimmerman, was awarded U.S. 257808 in 1882 for a design for a musical instrument that included mechanism for muting certain strings during play. He named his invention the auto harp. Unlike later auto harps, the shape of the instrument was symmetrical, and the felt bearing bars moved horizontally against the strings instead of vertically. It is not known if Zimmerman ever commercially produced any instruments of his early design. Now, Carl August Gutter of Markneckirchen, Germany, built a model that he called a Volkszither, which most resembles the auto harp played today. Gutter obtained a British patent for his instrument circa 1883-1884. Now, Zimmerman, after returning from a visit to Germany, began production of the Gutter design in 1885, but with his own design, patent number, and catchy name. Gutter's instrument design became very popular, and Zimmerman has often been mistaken
as the inventor. So if you have any questions about that, well, there you have it. And if you have other questions, well, Google it. Google it.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you a bunch of Otterhop stuff here just to show off the fact that I can play in more than one key on this thing now. Hop, Puff, the magic dragon, lived by the sea, frolicked in the autumn mist, in a land called Honolulu. Oh, little Jackie Paper, he loved that rascal Puff, and brought him strings, sealing wax, and other fancy stuff. All together they would travel in a boat with billowed sails. Jackie kept a lookout perched on Puff's gigantic tail. Noble kings and princes would bow whenever they came. Pirate ships would lower their flag when Puff wrote out his name. Oh, Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea, frolicked in the Artemis, a land called Honolulu. Jackie Paper, he loved that rascal Puff, brought him strings, sealing wax, and other fancy stuff. A dragon lives forever, but not so, little boys. Painted rings and giant rings make way for other toys. One great night it happened, Jackie Paper came no more. Of that mighty dragon ceased his fearless roar. His head was bent in sorrow, green scales fell like rain. Puff no longer went to play along the cherry lane. How without his lifelong friend, oh, Puff could not be brave. So Puff that mighty dragon sadly slipped into his cave. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the Artemis in a land called Honolulu. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the Artemis in a land called Honolulu. Heard this next song before. It's so one of my originals, not the words, so that was David Bradley's poem. And speaking of being a child, you know what the heck is good. Cotton candy, Ferris wheels, birthday cakes and rhymes, all the innocence of my childhood gone, like the days of the Mercury had died. See the yo-yo spin and rin-tin-tin, shooting marbles in the sun. There were colored dice, pillow fights, baseball cards with gum. Now those Easter eggs and those toy balloons skip rope of well-spent time. Ooh, ride the merry-go-round to yesterday, to the days of the Mercury had died. When steam whistles blew, Pullmans were new, hobos had nothing to lose. Miles and miles of tracks and railroad shacks, and my dad slept in the caboose, yes. And there were coon skin caps and Cracker Jacks. Double dare you tag your head. Now it's hide and seek, and don't you peek. Will you cross your heart on you? And there was Superman and Peter Pan. They say, howdy do, he's doing fine. Oh, but the Wizard of Oz, he just asked, Grandma, wish I'd asked for Mercury and I. Now those Easter eggs and those toy balloons, they skip rope of well-spent time. Whoa, ride the merry-go-round to yesterday, to the days of the Mercury head dime. Oh, the merry-go-round, whee, yesterday, are the days of the Mercury head dime. Ooh, merry-go-round, yesterday, the days of the Mercury head One, two, three, all night long. Hands and faces, spirits running free. One, two, three, all night long. Hands and faces, spirits running free. Gifts on gifts on gifts, nose and tongue and feet. Talk of rainbows from the garden hose and electric fingers slipping through love's perfect hand. One, two, three, all night long. Hands and faces, spirits running free. One, two, three, all night long. Hands and faces, spirits running free. Love on love on love. Eyes, smiles, laughing. Songs on beds with open heads, an electric finger slipping through love's perfect hand. One, two, three, all night long, hands and faces, hear it free. One, two, three, all night long, hands and faces, hear it running free. Blessing, easy flow and away you go, with your electric finger slipping through love's perfect hand. One, two, three, all night long, hands and faces, spirits running free. One, two, three, all night long, hands and faces, spirits free. One, two, all night long, hands and faces, here's running green. 5 minutes. Oh, gee. Well, let me see. This is great. You know what I'll do next week, folks? I'm going to bring back my auto harp and play some more of these songs, which I love so much. But right now, I want to leave you with a... And let me know when I have 1 minute. No, I don't even have to do that. Let's just... We don't have to do that. If I'm still doing this, shut up, Greg, and play. Okay. Mike's looking... God, Greg, why don't you just... You're talking... Okay. Hey, don't you just stand there with your arms at your side. Lift up your face and look to the sky. There's a sun and a moon and green all around. Grab onto yourself, swing your feet from the ground. Get back to your easy swing of living. That's it. Easy swing of living. Ah, your easy swing of living. Day after day, struggle along. Things you don't do, they all bring you down. But don't wait till your heart can't hear a song. Grab onto yourself, swing your feet from the ground, and get back to your easy swing living. Think it's not worth it? 'Cause you're alone, sick and you're tired, you don't have a home. Sing to your neighbor, can't put you down. Grab onto yourself, swing your feet from the ground. Get back to your easy swing of living. Easy swing, easy swing of living. Put a smile on your face and let your light show. Hey, sing to your neighbor. No, he can't put you down. Grab onto yourself, swing your feet from the ground. Get back to your easy swing, living. Easy swing, I want you all to get back to your easy swing of living. And if you want to get in touch with this radio station, www.kllg.org. This is Greg Shandell, trained singer. Looks like Mike's going to shut us down again for another day. Is that right, Mike? Am I right? That's See right. you next week. Happy Halloween. And don't forget to turn your... Never mind. Bye!